The world has changed a lot over the last several years, and there's many industries that have been adversely and negatively affected by that, and the career outlook in those industries has been tarnished or damaged maybe for years to come, which has put a lot of people in a pinch and looking for the possibility of a pivot. We've put an increasing amount of focus on unlocking the power of certificate programs, which enable us to quickly pivot into a new career in a very cost-effective manner, unlocking fantastic income potential and remote work flexibility. For those of you that are maybe for the first time considering making a similar transition, let me encourage you to check out Salesforce as a potential option. It's hard to overstate how amazing the growth potential in this particular industry is and how amazing the starting salary is, even for people that are literally working their first job in this role with no prior experience. For more information, to find out what it is, what it would actually entail, and whether it might be right for you, just go to chooseify.com/career. That's chooseify.com/career. On today's episode, are you too good for leftover casserole? We share our college plans for our kids, and I share the details of my healthy wage bet. Welcome to the ultimate crowdsourced personal finance show. This is your Friday Roundup.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, really excited to get into this week's episode. Help me with this. I have my co-host Brad here with me today. So first of all, Brad, let me go ahead and take a second and wish you a happy birthday. Did you spend some significant time frolicking in the pool?
Yes. Well, thank you. First off, I appreciate it. And yeah, we actually did. We spent a couple hours at our local pool that we've talked about many, many times here. And of course, we did frolic. And not only that, but my kids got me a set of a new swimming goggles for my birthday. So this was actually my birthday present. So yeah, it was just really cool to spend some time there. It has opened back up to some degree. So it's not exactly open like it was last year, where there could potentially be hundreds of people, but it's limited essentially to, I think it's 30 families, but it feels nice. You know, there are other people around, you can talk to people, and just good to be out and about. So we've been doing that. My family took a hike over in Shenandoah National Park over the weekend. And yeah, it was a good birthday weekend for sure.
So what sort of mileage can your kids do at this point? When you say a hike, you got a couple hour drive to get there. Did you guys stay in a hotel? Like what? Tell me a little bit more.
Yeah, it's a great question. So my kids they're troopers when it comes to hikes. They can do a decent bit. It depends how strenuous it is, certainly. So this particular hike was known as the Humpback Rock hike. So there are evidently these significant rocks that are just a couple thousand feet over the Shenandoah Valley. And you get just amazing views. But this was a short hike. And we're like, oh, this is going to be nothing. It's less than a mile. It was 0.8 miles. But it was 40 minutes essentially straight uphill. Picture 400 step-up lunges. There were these little platforms. You have to do 400 step-up lunges and then a little bit of scrambling at the end. But man, it was worth it. The views were incredible. There was like a ton of shade up there and a nice breeze. And we just had a really nice family morning. It was a sub-hour and a half drive. We were there for a couple hours and we got home by 1:30 p.m. So it was a good morning or half day excursion for sure.
You know, exercise like that, I'm sure you can work up a little bit of an appetite. I had this epiphany as I was driving home. I was preparing some of my internal monologues, my internal rants. And I was thinking to myself, wow, that casserole I had, that spicy chicken tortilla casserole that we had from the Barrett Top 50 Meals, that was delicious. Wait a second, casserole. I wonder if anybody, like when they hear the word casserole, they think to themselves, oh, it's a casserole. And then my next thought was, wait a second. Are there people out there that are thinking to themselves, we're too good for casserole. We don't do casserole. Like, is that a thing? I don't even know if it is, but the entire title, the premise for this episode is now, are you too good for casserole? And if you want to get rid of casserole and insert something else, Are you too good for rice and beans? Are there food groups that you write off because you're like, no, we don't do that? Brad, you don't fall into this category, do you?
No, I definitely don't. And what's hilarious, so this reminded me of something I said probably in one of the first 15 Choose a Vi episodes 3.5 years ago. We were talking about leftovers. And I said something to the effect of, what are you, a king? You can't deign to have leftovers. And I remember getting like a bunch of emails of people just saying, they use that phrase now, like in their real lives. What are you, a king? And we could extend that to casserole now. So, but you're right. Like, who gets excited about casserole when you hear it? But when you actually dive in and you look at it, and this particular dish was fantastic, right?
The spicy chicken tortilla casserole is absolutely on my top 50. But even more than that, it reopened the world of casseroles to me. Like, here's the thing. As much as I'm laughing about this, I realize that in good faith, over the last 5 years of adulting, I have not once gone to Google and typed in great casserole recipes, ever. Like, I've never done that. It would never even cross my mind. And yet, one of the best dishes that I've had was a casserole. And you know how, like, over time, you tend to eat a lot of the same things, and then you end up with ridiculous excess amounts of these dishes that sounded good at the time, but then you just never went through the process of making it. Like, for instance, when COVID hit, there was an entire run at the grocery stores for dried beans. Individuals that had never made dried beans in their entire life suddenly felt compelled to prepare for Armageddon. We needed a 45-pound bag of dried beans. Do you realize how many dried beans are sitting in people's cabinets right now and will outlive all of us? All of us, everyone listening to this is probably guilty. At least you use the toilet paper. Like, that's going to happen. The beans, they're still there. And so my thought was, like, fine, I get it. I admit that the point that I'm wanting and desiring to make a recipe, at that point, I'm like, you know, do I really want to go soak these beans? Do I really want to go? I understand the friction there. But your cabinet is littered with ingredients of things that you purchased at one point, and for whatever reason, you never got around to making the recipe. And now that's money that you invested that you're not utilizing. And 5 years from now, you're going to give up. You're going to look at the expiration date and say, that's a historical artifact. And you're going to then dump it. Like, that's your play. That's your big strategy right now. How much money are we losing by doing this? And I realize a casserole is not a spicy chicken tortilla casserole. Rather, it is a pretty predictable series of ingredients in certain categories that lead to something delicious. And so with that mindset, my newfound, you know, motivation from enjoying your spicy chicken tortilla, I decided to dedicate myself to the craft of leftover casserole, being a weekly event, a weekly occurrence inside the Mendonza household. And with what I understand about how you went about making, or how you know, what was in that spicy chicken tortilla dish, I made rice, very inexpensive, layered with a layer of refried beans, with a layer of chicken thighs that have been marinated with, you know, cheese and heavy cream and green onions and salsa verde and a few other ingredients. After all this was done, cooked it for, you know, whatever the time amount was, 25 to 40 minutes, I forget now. And dude, it was amazing. And I'm utilizing my cabinets and I'm systematically getting rid of those. And it doesn't need to be the same thing. It'll probably change week by week, but I'm going through and saying, ooh, lentils, what can we do with lentils? And so that's why I think, man, if you want to kick off a no spend month, if you want to reboot your finances, start shopping your cabinets. And the perfect way to do that would be with the leftover casserole challenge.
Wow. I like it, Jonathan. I think you're ultimately talking about creativity here, right? So you can pop into this leftover casserole challenge that you just started, or you can just think more creatively about your food. And to your point, people have hundreds of dollars and certainly probably months worth of food in their cabinets, in their freezers. Just be creative. Don't let that stuff expire. I think one thing that we try to do when it comes to food and trying to be creative is looking at certain types of, let's say, protein, for lack of a better word. But we'll cook up a steak. So Laura will get a slightly larger steak than we probably need necessarily for one meal. But she does it with the mindset of, okay, we can be creative. So almost invariably, when I cook one steak on the grill.
Wait a second. You turn on your grill to do one. I just want to clarify.
We're talking a couple, but not like one tiny little steak, like a London broil, like a multiple pound steak here.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
So, you know, we'll have steak and onions and whatever that first night. And then there'll be leftovers, right? So we'll have steak sandwiches a night or two later. And then what we usually do, and this is where our creativity comes in, is we usually take whatever leftover meat there is. Sometimes we do this with rotisserie chicken. So we'll go to Costco, get a couple of rotisserie chickens. We'll have this for lunch. And then whatever's left over, we'll throw in quesadillas for like a dinner. So we do that with steak. Usually the third night of leftover steak is quesadillas. And we'll, again, do that rotisserie chicken. You find cheese lying around. You find some onions and peppers. And you just grill up some quesadillas. So it's just kind of cool. I think, you know, less than the specific tactics that I'm talking about here, it's the larger concept of creativity.
Yeah. When you find that cheese lying around, hopefully you find it lying around in the fridge.
Yeah. Protein. Without mold, ideally.
Oh, you know, this is a fun topic. Let's spend a little bit of time here in that I thrive on challenges and kind of growth and just pushing yourself just a little bit, challenging things that, you know, when you're just drifting, you just kind of take for granted. Like, for instance, let me give you two or three just concrete examples of things that normally I just take for granted. You just buy more food. When you run out of the two or three things that you had in mind, you just go get more groceries. That makes sense. Well, what if you could shop your cabinets? You can make a challenge or game to think of fun alternatives for just what you already have. Like you said, and I agree with you, in my cabinet right now, even at the end of a theoretical 1 or 2 week grocery run, I have hundreds of dollars worth of groceries for things that, you know, I made an ill-advised, greater than needed purchase of. You know, we have a lot, we have a store, a stash, a stock. That's one. Two, this is on the other side, your consumption side. When you find yourself just drifting from one meal to the next, snacking from one meal to the next, if you can just wake up a little bit and do a little challenge and say, all right, I'm going to cut out the late night snacking. I'm going to cut the afternoon snacking. I'm going to really focus on creating some discipline around my intent, which is maybe to eat healthy over this, you know, really healthy over and cut out processed sugar over this 30-day period of time. That could be a challenge. A third challenge, just for a triad purposes here, could be like a spending challenge. So we talked about shopping the cabinets. We talked about decreasing consumption. How many of us have kind of, for the first couple of weeks, we thought we were saving money because we weren't going to the stores as much, but now it's just every night we just go on and we purchase something online. We've just substituted one kind of grazing habit for another purchasing habit. What would it look like every single time we want to, you know, we have this time allotted for just purchasing stuff? We go and we do something active, spend that time with your kids, go to the pool if they've opened, gone to phase three, go to the Shenandoah, like fill up your free time with physical activity and just make a note each time, you know what you were going to do because that's what you wanted to do. Like, you know, I want to go spend some money online. I want to go browse online, whatever. You said instead, all right, let's go for a walk. Let's go for an activity. Let's get the trailer and attach it to the bike and go to the local park, whatever that was. You make that and you just notch over a course of maybe 30 days, how many times you made the different choice, the slightly harder choice. These types of small decisions in aggregate, how does it change your world?
Yeah, and Jonathan, we've talked about this multiple times here on the podcast about these small little decisions and how they add up to something big. We've used the phrasing getting 1% better or the aggregation of marginal gains. We talked about this with James Clear about his book, Atomic Habits. It's casting a vote for that person you want to be. And every time that you go out and take a walk instead of sitting on the couch, even if that walk is 4 houses, right? It doesn't have to be 10 miles to count in some cosmic battle with yourself of what counts as exercise and what doesn't. It doesn't have to be something ridiculous like that. It can just be casting a tiny little vote in favor of the person that you know you are. That is habit change. So the little things really, truly are the big things. And, you know, you talk about these challenges that you're so good at undertaking. I know you have been working on a health challenge of late. Can you give us a quick little update?
So I did this video a while back that was like, all right, COVID's kind of knocking you on your butt. All your routines are disrupted anyways. And while it would be very easy just to get in a funk and kind of in a depressed state, what if we could use this lack of our normal routine to build new ones and get, in this case, in the best shape of our life? And in the spirit of challenge, I decided, you know what? Let's make a bet with ourselves. You know, guys, I've been talking about Annie Duke's thinking in bets. You know I can do this. Want to bet? Yes. Yes, I would. And so there's actually a company out there called Healthy Wage who will allow you to make a bet with yourself of some amount of body weight. So I picked like 10% body weight. The challenge, I'm going to lose 10% of my body weight over the intervening 6 months. So for me, I was starting out around 200 pounds. It means I'm gonna lose 20 pounds in 6 months. I could have done it tighter than that. It didn't make me do a 6 month challenge. I could have done a 3 month challenge, but I thought if I lose the weight super quickly and then just gain the weight back, you know, I lose the weight within 3 months. And then in 6 months I've kind of lost. There was never the point just to get to a number and then, all right, hey, challenge over. Now you can just go back to normal. I actually really wanted to create a lifestyle change around this. So I said, you know, 6 months is like a great amount of time. I'm going to be forced to think about this goal that I've set myself for 6 months. So I set a $300 bet. And, you know, at the end of the 6 months, I'm going to lose 10% body weight or 20 pounds. So I'm about 70 days into the challenge and I've lost the 20 pounds. Like, wow. I'm 70.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, and honestly, I feel great. Like I feel amazing. And it's kind of cool knowing, all right, in order to win this bet, and there's some other incentives and things, actually, I stand to profit about $1,000 if I keep this weight off for another 3 months. I'll tell you a little bit about that in a second here. But if you keep this weight off at the end of the 6 months, I'm going to get paid $1,000 to keep this weight off. And
hold on, I got to stop you. Are people betting against you? Who the heck is putting up this money? Like, yeah. Are they saying, no, Jonathan has no ability, no willpower?
I'll do a review on this in a second, but no, I do think that part of this is the fact that most people don't stick with their goals. And I've gamified it and I built like a structure that's actually pretty rewarding in and of itself, but it's being enforced by, I know I have this money waiting for me on the other side. Anybody can do this, by the way, but let me show you exactly what's going on. So what Healthy Wage does is when you sign up for Healthy Wage, it gives you a unique referral link and you can tell other people about it. And if other people join you on the challenge, not only do they potentially get some money added to their prize, but you get a prize as well for encouraging other people to do this. I guess this would be called an affiliate link in other news. And so I shared on my personal timeline that I'm doing this. I shared on our YouTube channel that I'm doing this and other people were inspired by my stated goals for myself. And they said, you know what? I'm going to start my own challenge. And now they can do this as well. They can do it with their friends, their family, et cetera. And it's the exact same conditions for them. They can set up a goal. They can set up a timeline and they'll get a referral link as well. And they can encourage their friends and family. Now I looked into how Healthy Wage makes money and they actually partner with different federal bodies. And we actually know this, like there's actual evidence to support that the cost to society is decreased when there's a decreased levels of obesity. There's a lot of health conditions that come along with obesity in our country at a macro level. Cost of diabetes, increased chance of hypertension. There's kidney damage, eye damage, a lot of stuff comes with obesity. So there's actual federal programs to support programs like this. But in addition, I'm just gonna be totally honest here. I think that one of the ways that Healthy Wage can afford to do this is because they normally win this bet. Most people don't follow through on the goals that they set for themselves over an extended period of time. So my thought was, what if I could create a cohort of people that just take Healthy Wages money and run? Because we know the process for losing the weight. It's actually not particularly complicated. There's a predictable number of steps that if you can gamify it, if you can create a structure around your goals and you can follow through, you are going to get the results that you're looking for. So instead of me just saying, here's what I'm doing and then checking in on the finish line, I just kind of made a commitment of documenting my journey and sharing exactly what I'm doing, sharing, you know, when I get stuck, what it actually looks like. And I'm documenting all that on the YouTube channel. But I just got to say, as part of the gamification, as part of me being very present and having to think about this, my accountability to people that were following on this journey, the people that had signed up using my link, I'm down 20 pounds in 70 days. And I'm like, I'm just getting started, dude. Why would I stop? I feel great. Why would you stop?
Yeah, that's cool. And I love how you're kind of jokingly saying, take their money and run. But I mean, that's what it's set up for. It's set up for long-term habit change. So, I mean, that is the best possible case scenario. So yeah, congrats, man. That's really great. And we are actually in a couple weeks here, we've got an episode coming up, the intersection of fitness and financial independence. So I know we're going to go into this in much, much greater detail coming up here shortly.
Good point. Yeah. So you're like, oh, well, what are you doing? Well, we'll talk about it in depth in that episode. All right. By the way, I guess just for people listening to this that heard me kind of talk about my Healthy Wage bet, I think it's important. I just want to be intellectually honest. Healthy Wage is allowing you to do this type of program because they think that if you sign up, you know, a lot of people just give up after a couple of weeks. But if you don't give up, if you lean in, you keep getting 1% better. I think that our cohort, our community can disproportionately take their money. So if you want to take me up on my affiliate link, you can go to choosefi.com/healthywage and you'll get an extra bonus added to your pot for using that link. All right. I wanted to briefly address this past week, we did our College Hacks episode. So on this show over the last 3 to 4 years, we have sporadically, as we've been presented with the information, covered different ways to tackle the college equation. We made a concerted effort to invite our audience to share with us what we've missed or what they would like to hear us address in one place. And on Wednesday, which is episode 230, we did a comprehensive episode entirely dedicated to optimizing the cost of college. And so, first of all, if you just are listening to this episode today and you have someone that's either in college or going to be going to college in the next couple of years, that one's worth the time. You should go back and check that out, choosefi.com/230. But we actually set up that we would like to talk a little bit about, currently, with everything that we just mentioned, how we're planning on approaching college for our kids. And so my kids are 3 and 1. I got some time. And I fully expect that the landscape of college will shift even more than it look totally different than it even does today by then. But Brad's kind of a little more interesting here. His kids are within a couple of years of really being in prep mode for college. They're going into adolescence, going into their teenage years. And I mean, he may not totally be aware of it, but Laura probably is. Things are getting real. And so I thought maybe what we could do is start with him and then I'll just kind of fill in the blanks and we'll just kind of like riff off what our current expectation for college, what it's going to look like for our kids. So Brad, we'll start with you. 2 kids. Is college in their future?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess to your point, this is definitely getting real. I have a rising 7th grader now. And my younger one is going into 3rd grade, so we still have some time for her. But yeah, I mean, before we turn around, my older daughter, Anna, is going to be in 9th, 10th, 11th grade. And yeah, it'll certainly be real then. So I think one thing you said there a minute ago is actually interesting, is kind of what we're thinking now. And I think this kind of typifies how I go through life, is we take in the best information we can and we try to not let a sunk cost fallacy or past behavior impact what we're doing going forward. We try to make the best decisions we can based on the information we have. And I think that's kind of just a loose framework, like I said, for how we approach decision-making generally. And we definitely have saved money fairly significantly over the years in 529 plans. So these are usually, they're state-sponsored college savings vehicles that, in our case here in Virginia, I know a lot of states give you state tax deductions for them. Here in Virginia, I think it's $2,000 per person or thereabouts. I think it might be per person per student. Don't quote me on that. So that's a state tax deduction. So that always was pretty appealing to us. And we did try to max out and get the full benefit of that. And I mean, frankly, a lot of it comes down to what I've learned from the Choose a Vi community. That's the beauty of having a crowdsourced show, is over 3.5 years, like you said, we've had so many guests and listeners and community members call in and talk about different college savings hacks that they've come up with, from Cody and his methodology for templatizing, in essence, scholarship applications, to Noah and Becky and their crazy golf caddy scholarship. Like, you hear all these things and you start realizing, wow, there's a better way. There might be a way to do this without needing to spend $50,000 a year or something absurd like that. And it got me thinking, is this saving and maybe oversaving? Is this really the smartest bet? And, you know, it's funny you mentioned Annie Duke before, because that thought process of thinking about life in terms of bets, like, that is something that I've thought about for years, but I never really applied it to college in this case. So I don't know what the likelihood of them going to college is, which is, Jonathan, this is my short answer to your question, is I genuinely do not know what the likelihood of them going to college is. I genuinely do not know what the likelihood of them paying $50,000 a year for college is. I hope it's as close to zero as possible. But I think, to me, it has come down now to flexibility. So I don't love the idea, and this is where we are today. And like I said, we've been saving 529s for years. But today, I don't love the concept of having this money tied up in a college savings vehicle that reduces our flexibility. Okay. So now, naturally, there are ways to get your money out of it and pay a small penalty. So it's not catastrophic. It's not like the money is locked up there forever. And there are lots of caveats, et cetera. But at this point, because I don't think it's as much of a slam dunk that they're going to go to college as I thought 5 or 8 years ago, or certainly pay full freight for college, I think our desire to save in these 529 plans has been greatly diminished to the point where I don't think we've contributed to a 529 in well over a year. It might be coming up on 2 at this point. So yeah, that was a very long-winded answer to your short question, Jonathan, but thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, so this is actually kind of interesting. So we'll take this from 2 perspectives. Someone that had a plan about, I feel like on parents, especially parents that have achieved a certain level of wealth and means, there is probably a little bit of societal pressure, or not even pressure, but just let's do the right thing by our kids. Let's stock these 529s with really no in-game or dollar amount in sight. We just max them each year. We'll just do what we can. And you can end up with several $100,000 in your 529, which kind of locks you into the decision. All right, the money's there. We're gonna spend $500,000 on college. Whew, wow. You're really confident about what the return that college is going to provide for your child, which, you know, that's a working assumption, but that's a lot of money you're paying up front. I think if you're a parent that, as a result of listening to the show, has said, wow, we have so much more money than we think we're going to need in retrospect in our 529. You were even saying it, there's ways to get it out. There's one of the things that struck me, though, is that the 529 can be used to pay for room and board. It's one of the things that it can be used for. And so room and board doesn't necessarily mean that you're paying rent to a landlord. Room and board, the way I understand it and the way I've seen several people in this space use it, looks like you getting your first house hack. You are the landlord. The room and board is used to help your kid get their first house. They get their landlord experience. They're renting it out. What a propulsion vehicle to financial independence if that's how you're oversaving. How can you reclaim some of your oversaving? So that's just one thing that I always have in mind when I think of individuals that have way too much, quote unquote, too much money in their 529. Is there something that you could come up with, you know, some sort of strategy that you could come up with your kids? I really don't want the kids to not have any skin in the game when it comes to the cost of their college. We see this with a lot of things, with healthcare even. It's a perverse incentive. When no one has any skin in the game, we choose the most expensive free alternative that's out there. We want to get the most value. So if you can tell me, I'll give you an example. You have a medication, both of them work apparently equally effective. One is the actual list price is $30. Your insurance covers it for free. The other is $200. Your insurance covers it with a $0 deductible. You can pick between either. Which one do you pick? Assuming that all things being equal, probably human nature would be the more expensive one. That's a sort of perverse incentive that you also have with your kids in college if they have no skin in the game. So how do you create a framework where they do have some skin in the game? You're still helping them. You're still wanting to do right by them, but you're not wanting them just to look at the most expensive ticket price and pick the most expensive school because you know the money's there to cover it. And so I kind of want to create a framework around that. Personally, based on my own college experience and how I'm using skills today and the business that we've created over the last couple of years, et cetera. And when I look at the skill sets, the individuals that have acquired that are helping us build this business, as well as friends and peers that are entrepreneurs and other small business owners, I look at how they can help build their businesses. And I see what they need is they need skills, right? Skills over degrees. And this is one of my biggest frustrations is it seemed like for the first 18 to 22 years of my life, all the emphasis to me was just get the degree, get the license, et cetera, which you understand if you want to be a pharmacist, you can't practice pharmacy without a license. But what a missed opportunity if you could have the last 22 years to focus on skills. And I could talk about 6 or 7 skills that I know are worth more than $100,000 a year in income, and they don't require a college degree. I've seen this proved out time and time again. There's a replicable path here. And so with that in mind, I'm like, all right, well, it depends on your kid. You're not going to just tell your kid what they're going to do. This is an ongoing conversation, and you don't want to dogmatically push them into college. You also don't want to dogmatically push them out of college. You want to give them the ability to buy into the life they want to build. But with that in mind, I don't feel like I was comprehensively presented the options that didn't involve a college degree. I don't feel like anybody in my life painted a picture for me of what was out there without the college degree. Not without. It's never about going without. It's about how much you can learn and how valuable those skills are and how little you need a college to teach you some of those skills. And I'm not even talking about for free. Some things have a cost. They could have courses that, you know, sometimes you have to pay for things. But when the sticker price for college you expected cost is $300,000, imagine that you had $50,000 and they said, all right, you have 2 years. What skills do you want to learn? And you understand where those skills could take you. What could you build for yourself? What skill stack could you build with $50,000 in 2 years where it's a process of interest-led learning? That is like my guiding light for how I want to go about allowing my kids to opt into their future.
Yeah, Jonathan, I love that phrase, interest-led learning. So I'm thinking about Zach and Andrew, who do the audio and video editing for the Choose a Vibe podcast, for the Choose a Vibe YouTube channel. And I mean, they have built skills. They're two young guys in their 20s, and they've built skills that almost undoubtedly could get them jobs and will propel them to jobs earning easily six figures, if not multiples of that. And it's been so amazing to see them learn and grow. And even more than that, to be able to follow a passion of trying to learn every little nuance about something. There are so many nuances to creating great YouTube videos, right? Then you can go down rabbit holes and it's all productive. It's all kind of synthesizing into something more. It's interesting, Jonathan. I'm thinking actually of my friends, Tim and Missy, who are Choose a Vibe podcast listeners. They live just a couple miles from us. And their son, Judah, is my daughter's age. And he's just a super talented kid. I've seen him create his own YouTube channel. When we were over there, he was filming different videos with our girls and his brothers. And it was just amazing to see. And I'm thinking like, man, someone like that, if at 11, 12 years old, is already starting to video edit and think about this stuff in this day and age, where is he going to be when he's 15, 17, 20, right? It's remarkable. And obviously, I'm not trying to say anything about whether he is or isn't going to go to college or whether it's advisable. But man, to see that passion at that young age and to know that in this day and age, you truly can make a significant living based on skills and passion, it just makes you rethink. And I think that's ultimately our point here. It's not to dictate to anyone listening whether college is good, bad, or indifferent. I mean, that's your personal life. You do what you want. But it's to open your mind up to there are different options. And I think you should always be willing to explore them and not do just what society says, because that's how it's always been done. That's what we're doing by our very nature of following the five path, is we're doing something different because we've seen a better path forward for our lives.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. You know, I think even we could even go a little bit farther with the actual interest or path, and we won't be able to be super comprehensive here, but I think just for the sake of kind of adding some flavor or nuance, it's very easy to hear what we just said and just, it sounds very binary and we get it. This is a super fluid conversation. It's super nuanced. This is us thinking about it through our own biases and personal perspectives and our own kids, not necessarily talking about your kids, but I'm just mentally, here's how I'm going through the process. I look at it as like industry. What industry are your kids interested in terms of how important this college process is? For instance, if you want to go in medicine, college is in your future. You got to go to college. You know, we can look at optimizing, but college is in your future. If you want to go into law, college is in your future. If you want to go into science or math, engineering, college is in your future. Not that you can't learn all these skills on your own, but probably for the vast majority of people, part of the application process is going to be, where did you get your degree? That's the way it is right now. Will it still be that way in 18 years? I don't know. But there are certain industries where it's very obvious that, like, still, your body of knowledge is coming from the institution. And if you say, I learned it on Khan's Academy, I love Khan's Academy. I love programs like that. There are so many fantastic options out there for learning, but the gatekeepers for many of these jobs and many of these industries are still going to be looking to academia. And that's, it is what it is. That's fine. If you understand the rules, and if you've kind of picked a career that falls into one of these very small sample size that I just used, and then again, you could be the exception of the rule. Maybe I haven't thought of something. And certainly as you move away from medicine and law, maybe there's some, you know, there's some nuance there. But let's move to the other side. Let's talk about management. Let's talk about marketing. Let's talk about business. Let's talk about leadership. Let's talk about, you know, some of these creative skills that you were just talking about. So YouTube, SEO, writing, freelance writing, all of these, there's probably a larger emphasis put on what have you done? What's your body of work? over what school did you go to. In fact, they probably won't even ask you. And if they do, it's barely a nod to check the box. Like our CEO, Ed is our CEO. I have no idea if he even has a degree. I'm sure he does. I doubt it's in business administration. I doubt it's a CEO degree. You know, he's fantastic, phenomenal. He has the skill set. Yeah, I know, CEO degree. You can all laugh at me, my lack of business words. And I'm back. But I mean, this is the point. We are moving to a world where more than 50% of the jobs, probably 70, 80% of the jobs that people are actually doing, you will get much farther by what have you done, what skills have you built, and how can you demonstrate those than you will by, you know, just putting all of your emphasis on getting the degree first and then trying to retroactively go get the skills like, oh, first day on the job, now I'm going to learn how to do the job. You don't need to wait for that. You don't need to wait until you're 20 years old to start building the skills. Think about it. And so I like the idea of an a la carte menu. Here are the options. Here's what your day-to-day actually looks like. Here's what you're actually doing. And now we can reverse engineer and say, okay, what skills would I need to be able to do that competently? And how can I demonstrate that those are skills that I possess? If you can weave all of that into a narrative, start working on that. Now, here's how we can streamline even farther. So let's say my son, Zachary, buys into my idea. He likes this, you know, and he's willing to kind of go on this social experiment. And that's the most terrifying part, is none of us want to ruin our kids, right? But I feel more and more confident about this every single day as I see more and more people doing this, and you just don't really have a way to hear about it or highlight it. So let's say around, we're having these conversations, he's Anna and Molly's age, we're really starting to get to the place where we have a sense for what he is into, what lights him up. And we start looking at different career profiles as part of conversations. We just start talking about it. And then we research together, what does this job actually mean? What skills do you need to possess? Now, based on that, we still have plenty of time. We're talking about high school. We're doing two things. One, we're trying to optimize and position ourselves so we can get access to dual enrollment. Like, I know this. This is what we absolutely will be doing. Dual enrollment. How can I get college credit for high school classes? And two, what does it look like to start networking and create internship opportunities in those fields so I get a chance to start doing the type of work that I say that I'm interested in? You shouldn't wait until after you get the degree, after you're six figures of student loan debt, to then do the job for the first time and find out whether or not you like it or not. Let's try to build that talent stack, build that network, and try as many things as possible at an early age as possible, just to give ourselves as much chance to find something we're interested in as possible.
Yeah. And going along the lines of, as adults, we think of networking, we think of, we're on LinkedIn, we're talking with people, we're keeping in touch with old colleagues, maybe at, you know, networking events in person or online. But for kids, you know, how do they network? They see their classmates all day in school. Are they networking then? And so one thing I would say you could do is, if there's like a favorite teacher, and maybe a classroom teacher or a teacher who's led a club or activity that's related to this interest area, this area where they have maybe a career interest or an activity or a hobby interest, stay in touch with that teacher and encourage the student to stop by. Maybe that turns into tutoring for that topic down the line for the student when they're in high school and they're in the next grade up. Maybe that turns into a great reference for a job or for a scholarship or something along those lines. And that's where you can make those actionable things of just staying in touch, that positivity that we know as professionals when we network. It's just pinging somebody on LinkedIn, how are you doing, what's going on, any opportunities. But when you are a student, it's a little difficult to tangibly put that in there. So that's one example of a way that a student can be networking. They have a summer job, stay in touch with the manager, even if the manager is only 1 year older than you, because it's some local shop and they're also a teenager who's working at this, you know, retail store. Stay in touch with them, because you never know where their opportunities will go if they were in management so young. So it's little things like that, just to start to plant that seed now for quote unquote networking. It's just being a good friendly coworker now, or a good friendly student now for students. But that's ultimately what networking becomes when you're older.
Yeah, it's amazing how even just saying the word networking, it's hard for you to say it. It's hard for me to say it, because it has such a bad connotation, and it really shouldn't, especially if done properly. It's about connecting, right? It's about relationships. This is what makes the world go round. It's people caring for other people. And you can obviously tell when someone's trying to be that ridiculous, scammy networker. But I mean, frankly, you don't really see that many of those people, right? Like, it's more a caricature than anything, but you can tell when someone's being genuine. And I mean, to your point, even just about that manager who might only be a year or two older, well, they rose to a point where they were manager at a fairly young age. that probably is a good person to keep in touch with, especially if you have a good rapport relationship with them. Again, it's not being spammy. It's just keeping in touch. That's just a better way of looking at it, is checking in with people. And sometimes you forget the people in your network. All of us do this. And it does feel somewhat contrived to write down everybody, but I've actually contemplated making a list of people that I would love to keep in touch with that I just, for whatever reason, just because of limitation of my own brain, I don't think of on an altogether regular basis. So I've talked ad nauseum about how I love my Todoist app. I have not done this, but I've thought about, you know, putting in just like a recurring every 6 months, you know, touch base with this person. Like, to me, that isn't spammy at all. That's just keeping up a relationship that I would genuinely love to keep up, if not for the limitations of my own brain, right? Mm. So if I can come up with a technological solution to overcome said limitations, that's a win as far as I'm concerned. So don't hold me to this, MK, but that is something that I would like to implement for sure.
You actually do a pretty good job, Brad, of building a system around that and following up with people. And I've always been impressed by that. You know, I think one of the things we're going to do is, we recently spoke with Jordan Harbinger from The Art of Charm, and we're going to be airing that, a segment of that, on an episode upcoming in the near future here. I mean, this is a guy, like, this is what he does, right? I mean, he lives and breathes networking, and there's a lot to learn. I mean, you don't have to do everything in the networking space to get value from people that are incredibly good at networking. There's one or two little elements that you could pick up. Even as you were saying it, I was thinking, for kids, it's kind of the same as it is for adults, except it's almost easier in some ways. Like, I was thinking, what if you as a parent created a podcast with your child to help them do different career profiles? So you're a 12-year-old, you know, you sat down with her and you helped map out, let's interview over this first season 10 people in this type of industry and sector, and let's find out what they do and what they enjoy about it and what skills they built to get this job. Do you have any idea how easy it would be for that 8 or 9 or 10-year-old to get that person to say yes to coming on their show? And then if you help them kind of do the prep work and craft, here's what you're going to try and accomplish with this and what questions you want to ask, really allow them to take ownership of it. Two things. One, they're doing the research and they're actually learning some really valuable information, getting some incredible insight into what they might like and not like about certain professions. But two, you better believe they're building their network. You better believe they're building an incredibly robust network that is unrivaled by any other kids their age. And this is the sort of thing that can be done on a local level. You don't need to have a million people find your podcast in order to get value from that. Your kid got value from it by learning how to storytell, learning how to communicate, learning how to interview, learning how to network. Like, all these things were built into this tiny little project. And it's ideas like that. It works for kids. It also works for adults. You know, if you're like, wow, I probably should have spent more time on networking, you can do that too. It's the same thing. Brad, wouldn't you say that our network, as we built Choose FI, like our personal network, has gotten much better and much more robust?
Yeah, it certainly has. I mean, that's just coming across hundreds, if not thousands, of additional people that have either come through our community, come through our podcast. And again, it's about relationships. I think that's the frame that I want people to walk away with from this, is networking is not spammy. It's about building relationships and keeping those up. Obviously, we all have finite time and we all have finite mental resources, as I've kind of jokingly said here a couple of times, but you need to keep up relationships. People like to be thought of. People feel good when you send them a little quick note or a text. It feels great when I get a random out of the blue text from someone. So I have to imagine the reciprocal would be the case, right? So this is just something to think of in a positive light. So yeah, Jonathan, like you said, we have that episode with Jordan coming up here shortly. So this will certainly be continued. But this is a really critical aspect of just living a good life, frankly. And also, it's going to help you in your life, right? You think about all the people that we've had on talking about getting jobs. And ultimately, most of them come down to personal connections in some way. It has to do with showing up. We've had people like Chris Hutchins come on and talk about how someone is going to stand out as a job applicant. And usually it's a combination of things, but it's preparedness. It's getting a warm introduction as opposed to just sending in your resume on the random website and be one amongst hundreds or thousands. And that warm introduction, where does that come from? It comes from loose connections in your network. That is the way the world works, whether we like it or not. And being good at having these connections and making relationships with people and keeping those relationships up, this is a critical life skill. It truly is.
So a lot here. I mean, we've talked about college. We've talked about networking. I was able to slip in how cool this whole podcast idea is, especially if you're doing it with your kids. I am personally going to do that and look for a way to do that with Zachary if he's at all interested. I should say to parents, I recently did an episode on Nick Loper's show. I'll have a link in the description talking about in the year 2020, starting a podcast versus starting a YouTube channel. This may not apply to everybody, but I know there are individuals that message us on a regular basis asking us how we put together our podcast. And it is something that didn't happen by accident. We focused on getting 1% better and kind of putting our processes in place. I will have a link in the show notes. We put an article just kind of on the equipment that we use and how we went about creating it. I'm going to be doing a live Q&A, just really focused on podcasting. So if this is something, I know this isn't everybody, but if podcasting is something that you are interested in, you're kind of curious, kind of behind the scenes, how we go about creating a podcast episode and putting our show together and maybe just best practices for starting your own podcast. I'm doing that on July 22nd. It is going to be a live event. There is a limit on how many people can attend. So if you are interested, please register ahead of time. You can go to choosefi.com/live. The information will be there. And that's just for my little event on podcasting. But we actually have a super in-demand, super awesome announcement around a live event that I think people in the FI community are going to be much more excited about. And MK, I will give you the floor to share it with everybody.
Yes. Well, tomorrow, Saturday, July 11th, we have, drumroll please, Brandon, the Mad Scientist, will be doing coffee and conversation with Brad and Jen on our Facebook Live. So we're very excited to bring one of the, I don't want to say one of the grandfathers of the FI community because he's not old enough for that, but one of the founding fathers of the FI community to the Facebook Live. So Jason has already marked it on the calendar. He is very excited. I know exactly where we will be at 1 p.m. Eastern tomorrow, and it will be watching the Facebook Live.
Yeah. What are you doing this weekend? Diving into the IRS tax code. No.
That's the cool thing about Brandon, right? It's like he is so well known for all those little intricacies, but yet what he's put out the last couple of years are really an in-depth psychological look at living a FI life. And that's what's so cool about this modern day mad scientist, right? Is it is that intersection of what does it take to have a FI life well-lived with clearly all of these incredible tactics. So yeah, certainly come one, come all. We've got this Facebook Live, it's going to go for at least an hour, probably about an hour and a half. Like MK said, it's tomorrow, July 11th at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And if you do happen to miss it, you can watch the replay. So just head over to, like Jonathan said before about his event, just choosefi.com/live. And that will let you access all of these events. So yeah, definitely head over there tomorrow.
All right. And I think we need to transition to wins of the week. MK, what do you got for us?
Okay. Well, we had Andy write in and Andy got a big raise. So congrats to Andy. So Andy wrote, "Good morning, Brad and Jonathan. I wanted to write to thank you for all you do, specifically the guests that have come on talking about how to negotiate higher pay. I work in a government job with great benefits, so I've just been content with my mediocre pay. After listening to many episodes of the show, I decided to see what was out there and applied to a job with another government agency. On the application, I put the annual salary I was looking for, which was much higher than I'd ever asked for in the past. I was offered that salary and brought it back to my current employer. Long story short, my current employer gave me a 17% wow. raise to match my offer. Thanks for all you do, Andy."
That's wow. amazing.
Congratulations, Andy. Wow, with a government agency to get a 17% raise, that is remarkable. And these tactics, these skills, they work. They simply do. I mean, we've had tons of people write in saying that they've gotten 5, 10. Jonathan, I think we had multiple $20,000+ raises, right? It's just absolutely crazy. And Jonathan, we've had a couple of episodes, certainly three stand out to me just off the top of my head of people who have talked about these very specific strategies.
Yeah, most recently we had Jessica, the financial mechanic. That was episode 211, really detailing how she was able to leverage salary negotiation on her path to financial independence. Prior to that, A Purple Life, which was episode 169. And also Tori Dunlap really leaned into negotiating your salary as well. So that was episode 147 with Tori Dunlap. With all of these that I just mentioned, if you need that inspiration, can you imagine if you should be making 20% more right now, you just haven't done this and you just needed that little kick? Just do it. What's the worst that could happen? In particular, Financial Mechanic, we really talked about it through the lens of doing it without burning bridges, right? So imagine you could do it. And even if you didn't get the raise, you didn't burn any bridges, right? So there's no downside. Why wouldn't you do this? And it would not surprise me. Like, just the fact that you're willing to do it probably tells me you probably are being underpaid. Just the fact that you're even considering it, I mean, means you know that at some level. So if that's true, go listen to these three episodes and then take action on it. Again, that's episode 211, that's 147, and it's episode 169. To access them individually, you can just look in your feed, or you can go to choosify.com and then the three number suffix, 169, 211, et cetera. Yeah, and then just send us a message and let us know how much of a raise you got. I mean, this is what happens. You just got to do it. So do it. All right, well, that's going to bring this episode to a close. Try leftover casserole this week. Let us know how it works, or negotiate a raise, whichever one works better for you. The fire is spreading, my friends. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth one life hack at a time.
And for those of you that had made a note or meant to go back and take a note about finding out more about this Salesforce career track, again, the link to get all that information is just choosify.com/career. That's choosify.com/career.